Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Here we go.
Brothers, sisters, and siblings, welcome to Penn Sunday School, starring Penn Jillette. My name is Michael Godot. Penn, Matt, Reddy, Rich, and I are broadcasting from our separate homes in Las Vegas. 33 years ago today, the principal filming on Penn and Teller Get Killed began. Matt bought a propagandist. It's a show. Here he is, preaching love.
Wow.
Mr. Penn Jillette. I was on a pretty good roll for a couple of weeks.
That was quite a falling off of a cliff we just did on that.
This is Penn Jillette preaching love. Michael Godot, what the hell was that? You actually, after 700 shows, you'd think you'd learn something.
Yeah, you would think. You know what? The pressure got to me. This being the 700th show, I was a little tense.
We are now the 700 club, so send all your money. God is punishing us for something, and you can help by sending me money. 700 shows we've done.
700 shows.
Wow.
That's a lot of shows.
You'd think we'd be getting better. Okay, you think I'd be getting better. You guys are really up your game, I want to say.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you.
It's a pleasure watching you improve.
Thank you. As Godot said before he fell apart, 33 years ago, we started photography on Penn and Teller Get Killed. Penn and Teller Get Killed was produced by Bernie Brillstein, who was a big, big, big cheese in show business at that time. The deal was put together by Sam Cohen. Big agent at ICM. I think ICM, doesn't matter. That was our chance. We were being groomed to be, big movie stars. And we decided to go to the Sunset Marquee in L.A. And Teller and I sat down for a few weeks in hotel rooms and wrote an insane movie. We didn't want to write just a regular movie, so we wrote an insane movie. And we also didn't know how to write a movie. By the way, still don't. And but we have more of an idea now of what we didn't know then. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like now I kind of have a little bit. We're getting to what's his name? Known unknowns and unknown unknowns.
Donald Rumsfeld.
Rumsfeld, yeah. Which is a really profound thing to say. And some people ridicule him for it. But boy, known unknowns are very different from unknown unknowns.
Oh, yeah.
Very different. And we thought we knew more than we did because we didn't have as many unknown knowns. And we had Arthur Penn, who I consider to be one of the finest movie directors.
Yeah.
And he completely and utterly made the movie we wanted to make. See, that's what's so disturbing about this. We have no one else to blame. The movie was really, really unsuccessful. Now, Teller still believes firmly it's a good movie. Mm-hmm. Teller still likes it. And people still come up to me. I mean, when they used to come up to me, now, no one comes up to me and say that it was, that they really liked it. Mm-hmm. And I think it got whatever that would be, sub-cult status. But the fact was, Warner Brothers, who we made it for, fucking hated it. I mean, hated it. Or was it, or maybe it wasn't Warner Brothers. Maybe they bought it later. Whoever it was that we made it for, hated it. Did not want to put it out. Thought it was an immoral movie.
Immoral?
Wow.
Yeah, because the ending was so bothersome to them. And Bernie Brillstein pointed out to them that their studio had made Dr. Strangelove, where the world explodes at the end. But they didn't care what Bernie said. And so the movie came out, and the Penn and Teller film career did not go in the long line of Martin Lewis.
It was no Goodwill Hunting for you? It didn't shoom, off you go?
No, no.
Looking back, do you wish you put a happy ending on it, a little bow on it?
Wishing back, as I often do, I wish I were better.
Right.
I think it's unfair to the world in general to say that the problem was that the ending was too brave and bold.
Yeah.
That wasn't the problem. The problem was that my writing and my performance were in many ways incompetent. That was the problem. And you desperately want to hold on to, I was just too brave. Right. No, I wasn't too brave. I believe that ending that brave, just that way, could have been done. And also, I think Arthur Penn was very good. Perfect. Fabulous. And I think Teller was very good. I think the weak link is now talking on this podcast.
I remember making a movie, an independent film, very independent film, with my comedy group right before the technology made it so that everyone could make a movie. Mm-hmm. Like, we were the last ones to spend tens of thousands of dollars on a movie.
Congratulations, yeah.
We were the last ones to throw out a lot of our, you know, parents' money on a movie. And then I remember watching it and be like, boy, for a comedy, I sure wish we put more jokes in it.
Hey, you know what, though? This week, I watched some of the old episodes from Sin City Spectacular. Mm-hmm. And damn, it's funny. That's really good.
You want to talk about cult
There's
following?
There's a lot of really great stuff in that, Mr. Gillette.
We don't have a cult following because you can't fucking watch it.
You can't watch it. It doesn't exist anywhere.
Why is that?
This is crazy. I got them from B.J. Kramer.
Because
that's how available they are.
Because FX didn't like it.
Okay.
Man, it's good.
And that's it. So it just sits. Is it sitting in a vault somewhere?
I suppose.
Like a vault would be really
a way
wildly optimistic.
A way you could say it is like your trash is sitting in a vault right now. You put it that way.
Yeah. Dumpster vault. They're so similar.
Between Sin City Spectacular and The Aristocrats, if there's one skill I want you to work on going forward, is finding a way for people to be able to see your stuff still after you've made it.
It's funny, but company that made Penn and Teller Get Killed didn't like it.
Yeah.
Company that made, there's a pattern here. Company that made Sin City Spectacular didn't like it. Showtime, even though we were at one time the highest rated show on their network, they didn't like it. Which leads you to believe that even if Penn and Teller Get Killed had been wildly successful, the company still would not have liked it.
But at least CW loves you.
CW does seem to like us. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought of that.
Have they been to the set?
You don't give a 28-episode seventh season to a show you don't like. I don't think.
That's right. That's right. And they smile at us. And the head of CW, once a year, sends us an email saying, good job.
And that's more than Showtime and FX combined, yeah?
More better than Showtime, FX, and Warner Brothers, I believe, if that was the company. Was there a company called Lorimar?
Yes.
There was at one point.
Yeah. I actually think it was probably Harvey Weinstein that didn't like us. I don't think there's any chance that's true.
That might boost sales.
I just want to make that a better story.
Yeah. That's true.
But, you know, Arthur Penn said there were three things that were really important in every project. One was that it be good. Two was that you have fun and you're kind while doing it. And three is that it's successful. He said two of those three things are completely within your control. One is not. Do not let the other two fuck up because of the other one.
Oh, wow. That's significant.
And Arthur Penn believed that we did it kindly everybody get along. He believes we've been a very good movie, and then people didn't like it. He considers that everything that was under our control, we did well.
If you want to look on the bright side of making Penn and Teller get killed, you and Teller both quote Arthur Penn a lot.
We learned so much from Arthur Penn.
Yeah.
So much. He changed our working relationship, how we work with each other. He changed how we worked with ourselves. He taught us so much. He taught Teller so much about working with me. The thing he said to Teller that I didn't find out till a lot later is he said to Teller, Penn knows when he's not good. He knows what he's doing wrong. You just have to tell him to do it again. You don't have to tell him what he's doing wrong because he knows better than you. But you have to tell him that you know too. So Arthur Penn would walk up to me after a whole scene, and other actors, he would give them all sorts of notes. And me, he would always walk up and go, you know, Penn, there's a chance that one of your friends or family will someday see this movie. You might want to do that again. And other times he would just say, let's go again.
Yeah.
And everybody on the set would go, what are we doing different? And Arthur would just go, let's go again. And then I knew it was me. He would never, I don't think he once had a discussion with me about what to do different.
Yeah.
If only Kubrick had directed it.
I would stand there after a take and I would go, oh, I don't know if that's good. I don't know if that's good. And Arthur would say, good, camera moves. And I would go, I guess it was okay. And then Arthur would go, let's do another one, Penn. And I go, oh, geez, all the things that I'm worried about were really true. But every time I finish, I have a whole list of things I did wrong. And sometimes I don't have to act on them. Sometimes I do.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I sent out a picture on Twitter today of us shooting Penn and Teller Get Killed. I'm in a Mexican restaurant with Caitlin Clark, who played my girlfriend in it. And at the table behind us is my mom and dad, because they were the extras in that scene.
Oh, you had to
pay them.
They did get paid. They did get paid. Damn it.
Good.
And
let you know how much Godot loves his parents right there.
My parents would have done it for free. They still would. You want to be really mean.
Right. My parents
are not.
Unconscionable.
I apologize for that. That was really terrible.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
But I would never watch the dailies because I would just get depressed. Oh, by the way, I think I should say that I agree with FX and Showtime and Warner Brothers. I never liked. Teller does not. Teller thinks they're wrong. I don't. But I would never go to the dailies, you know, which is where you show what you shot all day.
Yeah.
Arthur Penn would go, of course, and the DP, and Teller would sometimes go. But I never went.
You bring up a really excellent point for our listeners who are fellow artists, right? Because we all listen to you and how you don't read anything or watch anything that you do and go like, okay, cool, I can do that. And it's important to remember that you have a partner who does look at everything that you guys do and read everything.
That's what Piff points out. Piff points out that he is not able to act like me because he has to do the work of himself and Teller and Glenn. Yes, I have other people who do that unpleasantness for me.
Yeah, exactly.
So I just float my own world and no one pulls me out of it. But Arthur Penn said, I want you to see a few of these clips from dailies. And the way we're seated, my father and I cannot see each other. Okay?
Uh-huh.
I'm doing the scene with the actor, and my parents are pretending to talk and pretending to eat at another table. And Arthur Penn said, you've got to see this in the dailies. It is one of the weirdest, cutest, funniest things I've ever seen. And while I'm talking in the scene and acting, in the wide shot, you see my father. and my father and I simultaneously adjust the glass, adjust the plate, adjust the silverware, and then fiddle with our fingers exactly the same way every time Arthur says action. And we cannot see each other. Our nervous table habits are exactly the same, my dad and I. It was really, really wonderful to see.
That's very funny. Oh, look at the picture right now. It's the couple to the right.
There's only one of the couple in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's adorable.
Yeah, and you see how my dad is kind of his back to me.
Yes.
And our hands are on the table exactly the same.
Yes.
And they will be for the whole scene.
Well, that's really cool.
But making that movie was fabulous, wonderful. We learned so much from Arthur Penn. Teller still thinks it's a great movie. Mm-hmm. And I was heartbroken by its complete failure.
So, sequel?
Yeah.
Now that you've learned so much about movie making, it might be time.
Yeah, well, I tried again. I made director's cut. And I also found I didn't know anymore. I failed again.
Well, director, that was, you knew you were making an out there movie when you made director's
cut. I did, but I didn't believe myself when I said that.
Right. Yeah. There is still part of your heart that thinks, this is it. This is it. Avengers, yeah. Fuck those guys. I'm kicking
this is
their
Avengers.
Asses.
Yeah. Part of me thinks that, yeah. Mm-hmm. Turns out I can do a pretty good job with documentaries if someone else directs it.
Right.
I do pretty good producing documentaries. Tim's Vermeer and The Aristocrats came out okay. So did the movie I made about Johnny, Gambler's Ballad.
Right.
Gambler's Ballad.
Also unavailable.
Also unavailable.
How do you do this? That's
By the way, also Invisible Thread, which is the first movie we made, is really good. And that's unavailable.
Unrelated to anything we're talking about at all. I have an idea for Patreon I'd like to discuss with you off air.
Ah. I do own the rights to Invisible Threat.
There you go.
All right. I just own them.
Oh, good. Okay, good. Good.
So, yeah, Get Killed was an amazing experience. I really liked it.
Do you think maybe you're using the secret and you don't know it and you should do... Penn and Teller make a successful movie as a title for a movie?
That's a good idea.
Penn, Teller, and the Avengers. How about that?
How about Penn, Teller, and Robert Downey Jr. do anything at all?
Yeah. Good idea. But if we had let, you know, it was discussed having another writer in, you know?
Yeah.
And it seems like if we had brought in another writer who had some skills in making the kinds of movies that are just really successful or were successful at the time.
Or just know the framework of like tricks of the trade.
The formatting would have been nicer.
Yeah. They would have known how to use Final Draft, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know, you know.
If while you're beating yourself up, you should say that you have made hundreds of episodes of very successful television and specials. So you've nailed a few things in major media in your day.
Yeah, I guess we've made about at least, over 100 Fool Us, right?
Yeah, you made 104 episodes of Fool Us. You're about to make 13 or 14 more of those.
Yeah, and we made about 80 episodes of Bullshit.
Yeah.
And of those, only like 4 are pure suck. Isn't that right, Kudo? There's 4 that are terrible.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
That's a high rate. That's a good rate.
High percentage, yeah.
And there are about maybe more than that are really good.
Yeah.
And then the rest are all in between.
And there's one that you just can't even, doesn't even exist. It's joined the others in the vault.
I always love, quote, several parts of Tina Fey's book, but one of the things I love is like, of course you're trying to write the best show. Of course you're trying to make the best television. And then sometimes Friday comes, and what you put on paper is being filmed for television.
Well, that's the thing. You know, Arthur Penn said, every movie starts the first day. We're going to make the best movie that's ever been made.
Yeah.
By day two, you're just trying to stay alive. He said, you know, the whole idea of it falls apart. You're just trying to get through it.
Yeah.
But it's the other thing is about comedy. You know, when you make a serious movie and that serious movie is boring or stupid or goes too long in places, people say, well, you know, they were trying, didn't really work. But when you make a comedy that people don't think is funny, they think you were wrong. I mean, you set out to do suck. They really think that. I think it too. There's a difference. When a movie's not funny, you go, what the fuck is wrong with that?
Yeah, yeah.
When a movie's not properly serious, you go, maybe I didn't get it.
Yeah, I remember taking a sitcom acting class in New York and then being like, you know, the people who wrote those sitcoms that you love and get it are often written by the same writers who wrote that other sitcom that you fucking hated. And the writers don't know why the first one is unlikable and the second one is a hit. They don't know why at all. They're writing the same jokes.
There's some strange things that happen. Sometimes they don't shoot the gag. You know what I mean? They're just, the camera's a little off. So
but that's when it's good, Godot. That's when that's when it's someone else's fault. That's joy. Anything I've done that sucks because someone fucked it up, that's just joy.
There are so many things that I...
When I've done things that were brilliant on Letterman and they didn't shoot it, I am knee deep in my own cum. That's the best thing that could possibly happen. Because that bit was not as good as the people who didn't get it on camera thought it was. They're mea culpa. They feel terrible. What I don't like is when the shot is perfect, the setup is perfect, I do it the best I can, and it's not good. No, please, Godot, have the camera be off every fucking time. It's like when I pitch something and I go in, I went into Showtime and I pitch this idea for a show. So fucking good. So good. And they love the pitch and they bought it. And then my writing partner on it, we turned it in wrong and they got really mad at us and they didn't make it. Fuck, I love that. The rest of my life, I will think that that is a great, great project that didn't get made. What I don't like is when I go in and pitch something and they give me the money and I have to make it and then it's done. The best thing you can do for someone is say no. Be the bad guy. I could not disagree more, Godot.
That breaks my heart. That breaks my heart to see something that I go, oh, that was funny if you looked at it from over here.
But
they missed that part where he did this thing with his hand that made that really funny.
Oh, yeah. But that thing with my hands was not as good as you remember. That's my point.
I've been sitting in the other room going, tell him to move it, tell him to move it. And Provenza's going, you can't tell him to move that because that's not the battle you want to pick today. You have to pick what battles you have. So, they're not getting the gag. Yeah, well, you can't go tell him that. what do you mean I can't go tell him that? You can't go tell him that. That's their job. If you get into their job, then you're in trouble. That's awful. That feels terrible.
Yeah, to you. To me, that's heaven.
one of the greatest things happened to me was on the episode where I was on Fool Us. In the if you clicked info on the episode, it said Mike Donnelly instead of Matt Donnelly, and I was upset at the time and wrote everyone, and they all said they would try to change it, and they could not do it, and it aired, and in the info it said Mike Donnelly the whole time, and it was the greatest blessing in disguise because anytime someone writes me about something about Fool Us, I get to remind them that I couldn't even get them to change my name to my actual name.
When people talk about stardom, I always like to remember that on Ghostbusters, everybody in Ghostbusters was already wicked famous. Dan Aykroyd had his name spelled wrong on the dressing room door. Aykroyd's not that hard.
No.
And he'd already been on Saturday Night Live and in a couple other successful movies.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah, there's no bigger favor you can do for me than fuck up something I'm doing.
Good to know.
Taking all the culpability away from me. It's just fabulous. If everybody in the room knows it's someone else's fault, and they say, geez, Penn was really good, but that we didn't work. Oh, God, does that feel great? Just please, please have it not be me. I just... And then, you know, if I watch myself, it's just like, what was I thinking? What was I doing? Every single thing is terrible. What do I want to say here? Oh, yeah. Pandora. You know about Pandora?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, it ties into connection. I was really, really close to my mom. And when Mother's Day, birthdays would come around, it's really hard to let your mom know that you're thinking of her, you know?
Yeah.
It's really hard to let that know. So one of the things that's really good is Pandora jewelry. Now, my mom, I never got to buy her Pandora jewelry, but you know, I bought some for my wife and it is fabulous. It's the perfect gift because they offer more than just charms. They offer rings, earrings, necklaces, all that stuff. And my mom had a charm bracelet that she wore that had stuff from her her children, her grandchildren, and she would love to have any of that stuff from me. She would have loved it. Jewelry is, you know, I wear Johnny's bracelet. I wear a necklace for my sister. I wear rings for my father. I really think that for family, jewelry ties together really well. So let your mom know you'll always be by her side with a message of love she can wear every day. Shop April 22nd through the 26th. Receive a free limited edition sterling silver bangle with your Pandora purchase of $150 or more. This season, Pandora has gifts for every mom with new designs in their collection of contemporary classics. Pandora offers more than just charms and a wide variety of rings, necklaces, earrings, and bracelets. Surely can be customized, fit all styles and personalities. Shop safely in-store with Pandora's styling experts. Find the perfect gift for any mom on your list. Buy online with in-store pickup and curbside pickup at selected locations. Please contact your local store to learn more. So thank the mom in your life for always being there with a sparkling gift from Pandora Jewelry. Shop online or in-store between 422 and 426 and receive a bonus gift with your $150 purchase of Pandora Jewelry. Limited edition sterling silver bangle. Go to us.pandora.net/pen to start shopping and find a store near you. That's us.pandora.net/pen. You got that right. Now, y'all know, I've told you about this a zillion times, but you know how important Blinkist is to be able to learn stuff, you know?
Yes.
And when I say learn stuff, I don't mean learn stuff that Blinkist teaches you. That's a bonus. That's gravy. I mean, playing Blinkist while you're practicing allows you to learn one thing while learning something else. Blinkist is for anyone who cares about learning but doesn't have a lot of time. Blinkist takes the key ideas and insights from over 4,000 nonfiction bestsellers in more than 27 categories and gathers them together in 15-minute text and audio explainers that help you understand more about the core ideas. Use the blinks to get into the topic quickly, find new topics to grow from, or figure out which books you want to spend more time reading or listen to more deeply. What's more, they've teamed up with popular podcast creators to blink those for you too, shooting into the heart of a podcast episode fast. With high-quality audio, you can jump right in on the go during your commute, at the gym, around the house, or even download to listen offline. They don't say this, but also in practicing magic or juggling, it's really good. 27 nonfiction categories, including self-improvement, personal growth, management, leadership, and mindfulness and happiness. I love it. The whole time we were learning plate spinning, I was doing that all the time and just learning stuff and learning stuff. You can learn stuff while you learn stuff. That's my point. The Barefoot Investor by Scott Pape. Everything is Fucked, a book about hope. Why We Sleep by Matthew Walker. Becoming by Michelle Obama. Hacking Darwin by Jamie Metzl. Outgrowing God by Richard Dawkins. The Way We Eat Now by B. Wilson. Right now, Blinkist is a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/pen to start your free 7-day trial and get 25% off of a Blinkist premium membership. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T. Blinkist.com/PENN to get 25% off and a 7-day free trial. Blinkist.com/pen. Yeah, it's really good. It's a good way to learn stuff.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So, Matt Donnelly,
yeah,
you have been in the Penn and Teller rehearsals for a week.
Yes.
And yeah, I thought about this. If you were in the rehearsals for some other show, if you were in rehearsals for Piff, for rehearsals for a Cirque show, something like that, I would ask you, what was it like being at the rehearsals?
Right.
I'm going to put you on the spot right now. What's it like being at the Penn and Teller rehearsal? Describe the scene to us.
I'd say like it was a little emotional at first. Like when I first came in the door, someone said, "Hey, can you hold the door?" I said, "Sure." And then the guy opened up the back of his truck and out came your bass. And he was moving your bass back into the theater. And I was like, "Whoa." Like it was like a big feeling to see you going back in, you know? And then I walk in and Jonesy sees his piano. And he walks over the piano and he plays the Penn and Teller theme song just to make sure the piano's still working. And I got like really emotional listening to that. And Jeff McBride is there. And I was like, "Whoa!" And he's like, "Yeah, it's cool." And I was like, "Yeah, I mean, last time I was here was in Fool Us and I was literally sitting in these chairs wondering when this theater was ever going to get back in action, you know? So it's cool to be on this day." And Jeff really let me know how the rest of the world was feeling. He's like, "Oh, have they not done anything else in here since then?" No, Jeff, they haven't. I would say that everybody was kind of like nervous and giddy. Like there's like a giddiness to the first rehearsals or whatever, a nervousness. And then you guys started working like a well-oiled machine pretty much in no time. I think it was a little jittery for the first couple of hours, and then all of a sudden it was back to the Penn and Teller way of doing things. I'd say, in terms of being there for a few days in a row and really noticing how you guys work, I think it's funny that, like, you and Teller have been working each other for so long that, like, you guys don't waste extra time making things, like, abundantly clear, you know? If it's clear enough to move forward, then we're moving on. And your crew is the same way. Like, as soon as anyone gets a notion of what's being said, then people just dart off in different directions, and it just starts going on. And I said to Sarah, my wife, explaining it to her, I was like, if Penn and Teller know where you're going mid-sentence, you feel like a shithead finishing your sentence.
And what Matt is saying is so true. And also, no one else does that. No, everyone else drags things along the street until there is nothing left but a nub.
Yeah, there's no like polite verbal masturbation about figuring something out, you know, that there is in almost every other form of theater that goes on. And I'd say, like, everyone putting in their full work days was everyone's doing their first big work days in a long time. So you could feel that by the end of rehearsals for sure. And I would also say that by the end of Friday, if you guys were going up Saturday, I think you could have done it.
I think we could have too. I think we're getting pretty much ahead. I want to make this very clear because it's so important to me. We are opening up the Penn & Teller Theater, a 1,450 seat theater for 250 people. They will all be masked and they'll be separated. I'll also tell you the tickets are, you know, selling very well. We're going to be filled up. I mean, it's 250 seats all the time. It was amazing to be back in there. A few things amazed me. One was how no time had passed. It just felt like the next day. And the other thing was people used to always say, you know, you guys work so hard. You work so hard during the show. And I remember Cray Ray put this whole breathing thing on me and said, do 5 minutes of the show. This was backstage. Just the way you do it, full out. And he said to me, in terms of metabolic energy, your show is running a 5K every night.
Yeah.
And I was like, bullshit, I'm standing there talking, you know.
Yeah.
So first day we went out, we ran through a few things. I was exhausted. I just said, wow, I can't believe I stand up that much. I can't believe I walk around the stage. You know what I mean? I started doing my pacing thing that I always do. And I was like, I want to pace less. I'm getting tired.
Yeah. The first day we were still trying to work out a magic-y thing. And I had an idea and I happened to catch Teller on the way out to the car right after rehearsal was done. I was like, oh, about that thing. And Teller looked at me and he let me talk. But I was like, I should not. He's done. He is done for the day. And the last thing he wants to think about is a magic method for this one thing. He's done. He's out of here. And I felt bad for burning him on the way to the car.
Yeah, we, and then, you know, Friday, we ran the whole show.
Yeah.
Which is more than half new. More than half.
Well, that was just even a neat moment. Thursday was wrapping up, and you're like, Teller's like, I think we're just ready to run it. And you were like, yep, let's run it. And then Bert checked in with the crew, like, are you guys ready to run the whole thing? And they're like, yeah, I think we're ready to run the whole thing. And then Bert's like, should we set every little thing? Turned to magic and was like, should we set every little thing? And they were like, if we're going to fucking run it, let's run it. Everybody was like, let's do it all now. Let's go. Like, you guys were all on the same page. Like, come Friday. Like, it's time to just see what the hell this thing is and what it looks like and what it feels like. And it was a really neat moment.
And we did the whole show on Friday.
Yeah.
And I got home and I said, boy, I feel like I've been running all day. My chest was tired from talking.
Yeah. Well, you're not mic'd in rehearsals, and you are definitely trying to project to the whole theater when you do your thing. Teller was concerned for your voice at one point.
Yeah, my fingers. I mean, I've been playing bass the whole time, but I play with more energy when I'm in the show. So my fingers were hurting. My shoulders were hurting. I was going, wow, those people who said I worked hard, they were right.
that's a fun round of emails to send off if you get around to it.
It was just, I mean, it's just a lot of stuff.
You were talking about your Arthur Penn story about just tell Penn to do it again kind of thing. I remember when I first started trying to write for you guys for the Discovery Channel show. And anytime I wrote anything that was like a cute...
Discovery didn't like that show.
That's their fault. That is their fault completely.
But I was around for that, and you're right. They did not.
That was completely their choice. They did not
that was a good show.
Let us do the show we wanted to do.
The show we wanted to do was awesome. I don't care.
So much better.
But I remember trying to write like just a comedic like double down, like reemphasizing something to emphasize the punchline. And you said this once, and I heard it a few times. You go like, "I'll just do that with my voice." And you cross out the words. I'll just do that with my voice. And I have to be like, "What?" You know, like, just say this other thing with your voice, okay? And then, sure enough, when we went to tape stuff, you do stuff with your voice, and so. we were working on your new coin routine, right? And I'm not, I have a modest background, but I was like, this is crazy. I've never seen anything like this. This looks really cool. And then Matt King and Jeff McBride were like, what is that? Where did you get that from? Where'd you get that coin routine from? And I was like, oh, so it is as original as I thought it was. I just thought I knew nothing about magic. So you guys have a new unique coin routine. And we were kind of hammering away at the context of which you're presenting this coin routine. And you could see you were not jiving with anything that we were tossing out there for ideas for the context of the coin thing. And after a little bit of a silence, after we threw out a bunch of ideas, you just said, let's just do it again. And then you fixed it with your voice. And I was like, oh my God, he did the thing. He did the thing that he just did Discovery Channel. He just said, I'll do it with my voice. And he did. And so that Arthur Penn story seals that story for me now. I understand how you work and what you're doing there. It was really
neat. The coin routine is insane. And as usual, we start out very pure and austere, and then we have to slopify because we wrote it all monosyllabic.
Yes.
And carefully all the way through. And then we had to throw that out. But that is the spine of it.
Totally. And if you were doing like, you know, Sam or, you know, one of those things, you would be every coin magician's wet dream, you know? But I think for people who want to come see the big show, I think you have to do different stuff for that kind.
And also, by the way, we do explain it halfway through. We give away the entire method for how it's done. And I believe Jeff McBride still didn't follow it.
Yes, I think that's also true. I think that is true. I mean, you certainly have two big routines that are seem like they'll be staples of your show.
I think so. I think that Teller dressed in a camel suit.
Yes.
Will be with us for a long time.
Yeah.
And I think Teller being hit over the head with a sledgehammer will be with us for a long time.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
You know, that's the bit that Hondro wrote with us, and we decided to let the Spanish kind of flow. So we have the colors of the Spanish flag all over the stage. We have castanets. Jonesy is playing bullfighting music, and we have an ole in there. So there is the Spanish flavor of Penn & Teller there.
And I'll tell you, where I also coming out of rehearsals, I was like, those guys are fuckers. I'll tell you why. You have all the excuses in the world to do a different kind of show for the COVID protocols and have fun with it or wink at it or whatever, and or even dare ask the audience to grade it on a curve or whatever, you know? You guys have a fucking kick-ass show. Your lineup is ridiculous. The types of different magic and the type of different tones of magic in the show is ridiculous. And you might not know that it's adjusted for COVID protocols.
Well, you know, Tell and I talked about this a lot. And Hondro and Piff are doing a lot of stuff with the masks.
Yeah.
We're talking about that and sanitizer. And they're really good at it, you know?
Yeah.
And Teller and I are not good at complaining. And I'm saying that in the least fair way to Piff. But when Piff is pissed off about something, it's fabulous. Hilarious.
That's his show.
Yes.
What do you mean? He's an oyster, and you want that grit in there to make the pearls.
Yeah. In list of what you want to see in the Piff Magic Dragon show, good magic, Piff suffer, it's hard to rank those in a proper order.
Yeah. He's,
for sure.
He's brilliant at that.
Yes.
And so we thought, let's not compete on that front. Let's not do that. Let's try to do a show where people forget about COVID entirely.
Yeah.
And so we're using people from the audience in their own area where they don't get near us to handle stuff.
Yeah, but that just feels artsy. It just feels like a theatrical move. Yeah. It doesn't feel like it's like because of COVID. Oh, I see. They have to put them over there now.
It also helps the magic because we can't be peeking, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you don't touch their stuff. They don't touch your stuff.
We can't touch stuff, yeah. So I like it. It also forced us, and I like this, it forced us to do bigger things.
Yes.
I mean, there's 250 people in the theater. They're going to see a bigger show than when 1,450 people saw it more than a year ago.
Right.
We're just doing bigger stuff because we're very aware that they're not near us.
You also have a lot of material that doesn't need an audience member come up on
a lot of it, yeah. Which most magicians don't.
Yeah. I didn't understand that getting into magic as someone with none of those routines. It is interesting to see how much you guys can just get up and do. And it doesn't feel like, oh, this is a magic presentation, a solo piece, if you will, for you guys. You know, it's just they all have their own context. It's just cool as shit to watch. I mean, you know, you're doing nail gun, right? That's just a great routine that I forget whether, you know, if before seeing it, I would forget whether there's an audience involved or not, you know? And of course you have Teller doing shadows, which is a well-known solo routine that people don't seem to mind seeing time and time again. You know, you have that kind of stuff. It's really great.
Yeah, we're having fun. We're also being sillier than we've ever been. We're being just goofy.
All your new stuff is silly.
We're doing silly stuff. I think it's a very strong reaction to COVID and to Trump. And I mean, in that way, the show is like that because Teller and I want to be a little lighter.
Yeah. I mean, even like there was a moment in rehearsal where you started one of these new routines and you started in kind of like a classic Penn and Teller energy and you realized that it was wrong, that this calls for a goofier guy than your typical.
Yeah.
And it was because it was the first time rehearsing with transitions. You transitioned like typical Penn and Teller into this new bit and it didn't go as well. And I think that was like a neat thing to discover that you guys really have sillier stuff.
I'm looking so forward to being out there and hearing what an audience thinks of this. And you know, the other thing is we've got two new bits we're putting in right after we open. There are two bits that a little more ambitious than the stuff in this show. We didn't quite get together.
Oh, geez.
So we're going to put that in right away. So,
oh man,
the old standards are going to go away.
Yeah.
Right. Fun.
The show will be almost 100% new. So that'll be fun. Having a good time.
Really fun.
Yeah. Six new bits.
And soon that'll be eight. Soon it'll be 8 out of 10, which means opener, closer, war horses, everything in between new.
It's going to be great. I mean, you know, if I'm a Penn and Teller fan coming out of the pandemic, you think, like, what have they been working on in the year that they had off? The fact that you have, like, really cool, different, new stuff waiting for them, that's quite a treat.
Yes, we are able to show that we did not spend the entire time watching TV.
We're learning how to make sourdough.
Unlike everyone else on Earth. Let me tell you about Schitt's Creek.
So we got other stuff to talk about. Goodell, what have you been up to?
Went to a circus with you last night, but let's save that for the next show.
Yeah. Anything there, Matt Donnelly?
I watched the last episode of Fool Us, the last episode of season 7 just aired.
Let's talk a little bit about that. Not too much, but a little bit.
You guys were stagehogs is really the story of this show.
Oh, really?
You opened and closed the show. First time you guys broke format. Because you guys keep an extra closer in the chamber every season.
Yeah.
And so the producers were like, why do we do that? And let's film an extra bit that could allow us to open and close the show. And sure enough.
We do that because if one sucks, we can throw it away.
Yeah. No. I mean, I know that. I know that, but like, should it not suck, you know, ostensibly you have a closer that didn't air, right? Which you've gone back and done.
The next season.
Your 15th closer is bled into the next season. And they wanted to make sure that they fucked you again, to make sure you didn't even have one good leg to stand on heading into the next season. And you guys did two tricks. But your first trick you did with Gloria Estefan.
Oh, yeah.
You got tattooed.
I did. Boy, I'm still bleeding from that. You know that?
No, I didn't.
You can still see because we decided not to fake it, or part of it's faked and another part of it's not faked. And Teller got a little, I said to Nate, I think this tattoo needle is going too deeply into my flesh. And he said, no, that's the way it's set up. And I said, really? And he said, yeah. And I said, oh, okay. So we did the bit, and then I washed off the makeup and stuff, and I said, wow, that isn't tattoo deep. That's like traffic accident injury deep. And we finished it. Teller looked at the tattoo needle and said, the guard that you said you adjusted, Nate, is not even here. So my forearm.
So he was right. It wasn't set too deep. It was just broken.
Which is still cut to shit. And that's been how long?
It's been April?
Yeah, been a while.
No. We shot in October.
Yeah. So it's been months. October. And it still bleeds now and again.
Yeah.
It's deep. It's like tissue damage.
He just straight up cut you up.
Yeah.
But might as well just use an X-Acto knife.
But it was a good bit.
Maybe it bleeds every time they air it.
Gloria seemed pretty grossed out by the blood at one point.
Yep. Gloria was good.
She was great. She was great. And she made you work for that. She was not just going to say stop any willy-nilly. She's going to work for that tattoo.
She made us work hard in the force, yeah. And she also did that thing I love when people do. We were asking her, is it Estefan or
Estefan?
Yeah. That was a big thing. Glenn was very much in like, make sure you get Allison to say your name perfectly.
Yeah.
And then we don't mess it up.
And then Gloria said, I don't care.
However it says. I did like Google pronunciation out loud.
Yeah.
I went to like multiple. A friend of mine met her and did her show and met her. And I called him. Be like, how does she say her name? And everybody was very, very sure that it was pronounced three different ways.
Yeah. And when we asked Gloria, she really did say, I don't care.
I don't care. And she even went into detail. Like when I'm in Miami, you know, Spanish people say this. When I'm here, Americans say this. I'm okay.
Yeah.
She lives a good life.
And then who else was on the show?
You had Rick Wilcox came on and did a bit with Eggs Underneath Cups with Allison. Kind of like a hand stab routine, but taking turns with them, turning their backs to it, mixing it up back and forth. First round, they both go with one egg underneath six cups. And the second round, they had five eggs with only one cup that wasn't released. And he put Allison in a position to mess up her hand, and it all worked out. It all worked out. But a good, nice classic routine. And you liked particularly that it was a hand stab done with eggs and not a nail in a bag.
Yeah, I did like that.
Yeah. Fun side effect of the show, by the way, this year of not having an audience. When the producers whisper a pun into Allison's ear, she's making them this year instead of going like, I'm not going to say that. And that part getting cut. So she ended that routine with like three egg puns tossing in a break. And I was like, who is this host? Will Auerbach came on, an illusionist, who had special permission to, I believe he got special permission from Copperfield to do a flying routine also.
Yep.
So he does a crazy flying routine with his assistant who, you're never going to believe this, he's married. Can you believe it? A magician married his hot assistant. I think it's a weird world.
Yeah, it is.
I didn't know that could happen.
I think they think they're going to save money, but it's really an expensive choice.
percent. It's like when I interviewed poker players for the World Series of Poker that one year, and they're like, you're not going to believe it, but I was sitting in my dorm, going to be going to school for medical school or law school, but I decided I can make a living on poker, and now that's what I've been doing. Can you believe it? And it's like, I can. I can believe it. It is what everyone is doing. Every person in this line behind you has the same exact story. And I'm pretty sure we need some more doctors and engineers, but you know what? Let's keep rolling the dice. But they showed the Copperfield footage with it in the edit. And I'd never seen the footage of Copperfield flying. I've only heard about it in Reputation and stuff. And between the two performances, that is a pretty kick-ass rig.
It is the greatest. Copperfield's flying. Yeah. It's one of the best magic tricks ever done.
And it's also like what you, yeah, exactly, like you want.
Yeah.
There's, and that version of magic, it's what you want it to be.
Yeah.
Really neat. Not a fooler, though. And then you had, who am I missing? Oh, Siegfried Tieber.
Oh, yeah. I love Siegfried. And, you know, that trick inspired us to do a new trick that we're going to be doing as soon as we open. One of the new tricks we're putting in is based on that.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And I called Siegfried, and I said, I was inspired to do this trick because of you. I want to run it by you and see if that's okay. And he thought they didn't even overlap. He thought we could even do them on the same show. But I was inspired by his trick, so I wanted to tell him.
Yeah, this definitely seems like the kind of trick that you love.
Oh, love, 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 love. Teller does not like that much. I love.
Anytime where you can replace sleight of hand with just hard mental work, you're in.
I love memorization. I love it.
Yeah. So he had decks labeled with each day of the pandemic behind him, and all in a different order. And he just proved that three different rounds every which way. So Allison picked a card in 3 days, and he went to each deck knowing where it was that Ace of Hearts was in each deck. Then he pulled out a deck, asked Teller to name position, and you name a card. He found it there. Then he told Teller to pick a card, and you picked the position, and he found the date. That was the hardest one. The round three is where you set the position of the card, Teller picked the card, and he looked back and found the date that he put the deck in that order on that particular day.
So good.
Out of six cards. I love him. Cards.
You know, he also is Moxie's magic teacher now.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, Moxie took an online class with Siegfried, one-on-one tutor. He taught Mox card tricks. So that he's great. I like him. So when I looked at all the magicians who could teach Moxie, we chose Siegfried.
Now, does Mox share your sentiment for mental magic?
No.
You'd rather do sleight of hands and slights in that. Sleight of hand, kind of dirty work.
And also, you know, Mox is young, so Mox still wants to buy tricks.
Yeah, oh, right.
Mox still thinks that will work, you know.
Yeah. Moxie, what does he know? Who's buying a lot of tricks and wondering what's showing up at Amazon the next day because they ordered so many? Just Moxie, that's it.
You bought a sub trunk, did you?
I did. I bought a sub trunk. My wife was not happy about it. I was cleaning out the garage and she was thrilled. And then I bought, I put a sub trunk and a levitation rig. And then she was no longer happy.
Just so you know, sub trunk is a trick that Houdini did.
Yeah.
It's the trick that the patter's the same in English and in French. One, two, three, it's me. Un, deux, trois, c'est moi. It's where the people change positions where they're tied up in a box. They change positions.
Yeah. And the one that I bought was built for a guy who is 6'5". So it's the largest sub trunk there is. And that's why I bought it. I had a routine I wanted to do with Sarah, and that routine did not come to fruition during the pandemic like Six Pen and Teller Bits did. And so my wife has not been happy about the sub trunk, but I bought it pretty cheap. And then a company called me up and said, we heard you have a sub trunk. Will you rent it to us? And I thought it was weird because the company that rang me up was the company I bought it from. So I was like, this feels silly.
We heard you have a sub trunk.
We remembered you have a sub trunk. And I said, sure. And they want to rent it. And I said, name a price. I don't rent my stuff out often, so I don't have an index here. Just let me know what you think you want to pay. And they gave me a quote that was basically what I paid for it. And so I was like, this is great. And they know that because I bought it from them. But who knows how the world works? I don't know. But the best part is that the company, you know, does multiple shows in town. This was rented for a different show than the one I bought it from. And it happens to be the show that my wife was in. So my wife gets to see the sub trunk leave the garage and go to work and then see the sub trunk at work that she hates.
But you win big time.
I win. I won. It's very, it's not good for comedy to tell stories where you win, but I don't care. I'm sticking it to my wife. I love it. I won. I fucking won.
And so far, that is one for you, right?
Oh, yeah. I don't want to look at the whole. I'm a battle, not a war guy, Penn. I'm looking at the short game here. I'm living in the present. And right now, presently, I have recently won.
Who else was on Fool Us?
That was, I think that's it, right? With Wilcox, Siegfried, Tabor, Will Auerbach. And it was just you guys again. Just you.
What'd we do?
You did Is That Magic, where Teller, you guys had a plexi
thing
set up.
I like that trick.
Yeah, you worked with a crew member. Teller gives half the deck over, and no matter what she picks, Teller picks the pairing card. What's it called, Ready Rich?
Sympathetic.
Sympathetic card. So he's doing a sympathetic card routine. And that's not, it is really just a comedic monologue of Penn talking about math, which you just described earlier as your big passion. And so
nothing I'd rather do. If the Penn and Teller show were written just for me, it would be a 90-minute monologue about arithmetic.
Well, I just want to say that Fool Us must have taken some improv classes lately because they yes-anded you.
Yes.
And as you were coming, as you were performing, up came a map of Gainesville, Florida. Up came the population of Los Angeles and the world and 18 billion and showing everyone in China and all the things you said to illustrate math. Fool Us was right there with visual aids for this card trick through plexiglass. It was pretty great.
Yeah, well, I just, you know, All I hope is that they'll pull segments of Fool Us and the children will sleep through them in math classes. That's all I want.
That's totally it, right? Like, math teacher's like, good, I can show them a magic that uses some of this math and they'll get it.
They'll hate it.
That's right. They used to just hate math. Now they can hate both.
Now, we got, anybody got anything coming up before I close it?
I kept saying May 5th that I was going to be in Folsom for 8 shows. Turns out May 4th. So, boy, are their tickets still available for the 4th, because I wasn't talking about it at all. But it's Mystic Dining. They do a 5-course fancy dinner, and then I perform in a lounge. It's just 10 people, and there's some safety equipment in place to make sure the shows go according to COVID protocols. But May 4th through the 9th, I'll be doing 8 shows. Look up Mystic Dining in Folsom, California.
Nice. Good for you. Congratulations.
You got anything, Godot?
I got June 21st in Lubbock for a private show. So if anybody wants something anywhere in Texas, the 20th or the 22nd, boy.
very negotiable. You know, it's very
negotiable. Very negotiable. Pizza.
You're near Lubbock.
Wasn't that what you were saying? A pizza would be?
yeah, exactly.
You know, pizza on the 20th or the 22nd.
I might backyard is A-okay for Michael Godot.
Love doing backyard shows. I really do.
Okay, that was Penn Sunday School. That was Penn Sunday School. Cha cha cha. And to our listening ears, you become naked. Yeah, we're going to talk a lot about circus and seeing a show live. You saw a live show. And you know we love you. You got anybody to thank there, Matt?
I sure do. Steve Brevik, nobody in particular. Louis Reguluan, guy on Twitter who asked Penn to keep the cha-cha-cha alive just before New Year's Eve 2012. Brandon Knapp, Richard Aldred, Big Damn Clay, Nick Dingman, Colin Durham, The Big Scuba Podcast, Christine and Bobby Mack, Christina Keller, Carrie Kissler, Central Park Owl, Lancey Menchu, Stephen White, Harlem Liam Clark, Zach Wozniak, Andrew Bernane, Paul Atkinson, Michelle Yeiser, and Jonathan. Thank you.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.